the races with Steve Bick. Enough. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Santa Anita, a very good Monday, race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevevick.com, 2 weeks actually, right? 12th, 19th, 26th. Yep, 14 days. They'll open up here, one of the great race days anywhere, one of the great traditions in the game. Not such a tradition is the 40-degree temperatures and the rain. They got to stop with this. Apparently today's the last of it. I've been coming here a long time. Not just here, but of course LaSalle and the big weekend down in Cyprus to talk about. We'll check in with Steve Anderson later this hour. But as long as I've been coming here, this is as rough a patch of cold and wet that I've seen. It's crazy. And I'm sitting out here in the traditional Clocker's Corner, sort of the crow's nest, as it were. Lots of water, lots of standing water for those of you over the years that have joined me at this spot, horsemen and other pundits and any number of people over the years. But listen, it's got to get nicer from here. And I understand. Looking ahead toward Thursday and Friday, Saturday, and I haven't checked again, but Dale Day at Remington, as we start to get excited about next weekend already, the Springboard Mile, closing weekend in Oklahoma City, but apparently there too, going to be a little cold. And I guess back east, I just heard from Rich Migliori, who is a healthy scratch, let's put it that way. Mig begged off as he digs out from snow. Tina said to me yesterday it was snowing, and but I think they might have gotten more down by Mig, was that Columbia County, than we got back at home. There is a great tradition, much like opening day at Santa Anita. Another great tradition is snow for Tina to clear while I'm away. That's an all-time classic, for sure. I'm just kind of getting a kick. All right, I'm just seeing from Hammer. Okay, Hammer just touching base. Let me do a couple things. He's on his way to Kentucky. It's going to be kind of a different Monday with no Mig and with a few other things having happened. I know we're going to talk to Graham Motion later this morning and catch up with Graham. We tried all week, he was between his travel and whatever else, and of course Friday we do the weekend preview. But couple of things that we'll catch up with. I'm going to actually start with a very sad piece of news for those of you that have been involved with the show going back to its origin. And its origin, of course, the summer of 2005 here on Sirius. At that time, just Sirius, of course, because XM did not merge till later. In fact, I don't even really remember when the merge happened, but it just feels like it's been Sirius XM forever, but it wasn't. Sirius was brand new, and the idea of a horse racing channel on the network was in its, you know, its infancy, and there were there's certainly some things that you probably aren't even aware. I mean, depending on when you latched onto the show, but the origin was Sam and JJ. And JJ Gracie, who you heard with me and Tony during the summer at Delaware Park, and these last 2 years, JJ doing the paddock commentary, and of course enjoyed a successful training career. His daughter Kim, successful, kind of going on with it. And JJ passed away yesterday, and was only diagnosed with cancer not all that long ago, but there was little that could be done by the time they found it. And it's very sad. My appreciation, obviously, and the debt that I've got to JJ and Sam and Gus Alonzo and John Parada, that's the origin of this show. And JJ and Sam were on radio in Southern Florida, and John Parada had, and I've got to talk about later about spending a lovely evening with John and his wife Maggie. They were in town and had a get together Saturday night. Went there after the Starlet, and the opportunity, John had a conduit to Sirius, and he heard Sam and JJ, and he wanted to put together this network of shows potentially, and he approached Sam and JJ, and they created At the Races and Beyond, which was the origin, and it went from there. Gus Alonzo was living in the area in South Florida, and Gus was doing the handicapping, and that started in July of 2005. I got involved in November when Gus reached out to me. Gus had to move to Chicago, and he said he wasn't going to be able to do the show the way he had been doing it. And he'd been doing the handicapping on Fridays, and Gus had been a member of my Derby Trail group on Yahoo. That's how far back this goes. And he approached me about doing the handicapping, and that was my entree to the show. And then, of course, 2 years with basically kind of in a co-hosting role with mostly with JJ. John joined us a lot, and Sam, of course. And JJ was affable and funny and knowledgeable and experienced, and just his understanding of the game and a lot of the rough edges of the game in particular. And he brought a certain, a certain authenticity, and always had, and he had done the television work in Philadelphia. Tony will talk about that in just a couple of minutes. I got to reach out to Rick because he's about to board a plane, and I know he wanted to say something this morning too, and then we'll go to Tony. But there was a certain interesting dynamic with JJ and me, and then when John was in, because John had this other this other side of the business, and the two of them as knowledgeable and thorough an understanding of how the sport worked, and of course being part of its history in the second half of the century. And John is a breeder and running Due Process and himself as a jock agent for many years. I can't begin to express my appreciation to JJ. And in June of 2007, after the Belmont, is when Sam and JJ they had a bunch of other business interests that they were involved in, and so they stepped away. And John said, "If you want to go on with the show, it's yours." And that you know, that's exactly what happened. And, you know, here we are all these years later, 15 years later. And I'm so glad we had the chance to do that show with Tony. And Tony was with him on Thursday. He'll talk about their last opportunity to spend some time with him and all the wins they had together. I mean, nobody knew Joe Gracie better than, you know, found the racetrack than Tony. Let me quickly grab Hammer before he gets on this plane, and because I know he wants to, because he was there at the beginning, and when John Parada said to him, I need you to fill half an hour of of radio time with the show, and Hammer, good morning.
Hey, Steve.
You were recounting that early, you know, those early days, and I did not find out about the show really until October, November of 2005, but you were on with JJ from literally the first show.
Like I said, sorry to start out Monday morning hearing about the news, but yes, I got the call from John. And he said, hey, I got 15 hours of radio that we can talk about horse racing. I need you to do me a favor. And I said, what's that? And he said, I need you to be filler. I said, okay, what's that mean? He goes, you need to talk for an hour. and as it happened, it was the last hour of the week, and on Friday, the last hour. And it was kind of odd because at the beginning, with JJ, it was basically 14 hours of East Coast, and then they got me for the West Coast for the last hour. And JJ, of course, was the first host, and he was kind of new at it too, but he was way ahead of me. I said, what do I do? He said, just keep talking, bud. and I think it was at Del Mar when we first started. He says, well, you're at Del Mar. He said, just talk about what you see. He goes, throw a few horses in there. He goes, one of them will win every once in a while, and you'll be fine. And, yeah. You know, he kind of, you know, nursed me along. And sure enough, that's what we started. And that's kind of where the old grab a guy as he's walking by thing came. And, you know, he just said, just don't leave me hanging. And he was great as a little coach as far as, like I said, just keeps things going. And, you know, which started the deal. Talk about anything. You know, we don't have to talk about horses 24/7 or the whole hour. And so, like I said, I was in Del Mar, and we talk about the beaches and things like that. But no, he was there all the time. You know, kept the show going right from the beginning. And you know, we made up a little motto. You'll hear today what you read about tomorrow.
That's right. That's right.
And so he and you know, I didn't know him greatly when we first started, but you know, I was at Monmouth before I came to California to work for 12 years, and so you know, he ran horses in and out, you know, Atlantic City and Philly, and you know, in and out of Monmouth. So I did know him, and you know, high bye type of thing, and then of course got to know him a lot more, and you know, got to hand it to him for keeping that show going for, you know, the first. You know, the first bit until Steve Bick hit the show. But no, it was all JJ and, you know, John Parada and determination to, you know, we're not going to let these 15 hours go away, because if it got away, it would have got sucked up by something else. And, you know, who knew, right?
Yeah.
And it's become just a part of become a part of my life every Friday for the last 15, 16, 17, 18 years, however many it is. You know, it was Thursday night homework and get ready to talk about some stuff on Friday. And you never knew where JJ was going to go. And it's kind of more, it's more fun that way. Just like us, we never talk about what we're going to talk about. it would just go. So, you know, sorry to hear. And of course, and it was kind of odd that, you know, you and I and John Parada saw each other a couple days ago here in LA and brought up JJ. And so actually made me feel a little bit better that we had talked about him. And then, of course, he gave me the news yesterday and, you know, wanted to, you know, at least be able to say a few things before I jump on a plane here. And, you know, God bless you, JJ. We'll be, you know, thought about you often and will continue to do so.
I appreciate it, Rick. And, you know, Tony will add a lot. I mean, I was very glad that, you know, that time we spent in Delaware, that the day in Delaware when I invited Jay to come on and Tony came down from Philly, and that I'm so glad that came off, because we really had not talked in ages, and I hadn't seen them at Gulfstream in a long, long time either, Sam or JJ, so that was opportune. He's one of those guys that you see, and he looked the same these entire 20 years, really. I didn't really ever think of JJ as aging.
No, it looked the same, sound the same, yeah. You know, the whole deal. And, you know, and Sam as well. But, yeah, you know, it just goes to show, you know, take those opportunities, especially now we all get a little older, to see people when you can. And, but no, he never changed. He was the same. And, you know, and after he left the show, he was still doing some radio, some horse racing radio down in Florida. He'd call me every once in a while. Hey, can you do me a favor? You know, guys, sure. You know, so he would call, you know, and we would do a half hour, whatever he wanted to talk about, you know, we would go. So still kept active. And you know, he was a character on the track and off the track. So he was a fun guy. Otherwise it doesn't work if you're not a fun guy. That's all. Yeah. Okay. Don't have time for dull people, you know, at this point. Like I said, always have a place in my heart about, just carrying on and getting the thing rolling. For sure.
I appreciate it, Rick. We will catch up with you later in the week, the Graded State Committee meeting. What's the schedule this week?
Get in today. What's today? Monday, yes. Then we meet all day tomorrow, Tuesday, and then however much longer it takes, Wednesday. So it's a day and a half session. And put it this way, I had to study the books. I was talking about the books. They have so much. I checked it. I didn't want to carry them. They're heavier than my suitcase. So the guy goes, "You want to check this little thing?" I said, "Yeah, pick it up. Go ahead, bud." So we go through the books, and it's over 500 races that we literally look at one at a time, and you know, decide what we're going to do. So it's a heavy. It's not a terribly fun, but it's I enjoy it, and everybody that's on the committee will enjoy it. We'll as it will have by the time Friday rolls around, things will be released on Thursday, so we'll be able to talk a little bit about what happened.
All right, excellent, perfect.
So,
all right, safe travels, and I will we'll talk later in the week.
Sounds great, Steve.
Rick Hammerly, everybody, and was with Rick and Gina, as I mentioned, with John and Maggie at the bungalow that in Santa Monica on Saturday night. And Tony had reached out, and I'll get Tony now, we'll get really the, you know, the difficult last. Little while here. Tony let me know, I guess it was on Friday. I was driving in LA, and Tony had, you know, texted me and said JJ's not well and doesn't have long. Tony Black joins us, and I don't think Tony, we've ever identified exactly how many wins you and Joe Gracie combined for, but it was the estimate is what, 700?
Yeah, it's got to be in that territory, because it was hundreds and hundreds of wins, and some of them had some stories to them that were sometimes of interest. And I got a call last Tuesday from Sam and explained what JJ's condition was. The Thursday I drove to Harrisburg, and believe me, it was, I was so glad that she had called. and inform me what was going on, because JJ doesn't want many people to know, and it was just family and some very close friends, and I guess they considered me friends and family. So and you know how you said JJ always looked the same?
Yeah.
Believe me, Steve, he looked the same Thursday. If you didn't know his condition, you'd never know what he was, what was wrong with him. And he sounded good. He was mentally sharp as a tack. He brought up a story. He said, remember when Reliable Jeff won the stake at Garden State? I said, yeah, and he had pictures. Tons of pictures there. Sam brought them all out. I didn't even remember all the horses' names. He says, I never heard anybody talk to the stewards like you did. When you went over to the phone, I says, Tone, we're going to be all right. It's, you know, it's a $50,000 Jersey bred stake. And I said, yeah, we're all right, JJ. And you went to the phone and you said, Judge, there was never any hole on the rail when that jock started up in there. Unless he was on a real skinny horse, he would have never got through there. And he said, I laughed. He said, when you said if he was on a real skinny horse, he'd have been on a real skinny horse to get through that hole because it wasn't there. And the number stayed up, and JJ and I laughed about it. And he brought pictures out that I didn't even remember the names of the horse. And it hit me while I was sitting there talking to him. I said, JJ, you were one of those stand-up guys when it came to me. You were more than just a trainer I rode for. You were like an older brother. I says, you went through two divorces with me. You went through two rehabs and drug and alcohol addiction recovery with me. You went through a multitude of spills and broken bones that I received from the spills, and you never turned your back on me. When I went through the rehabs, there was people that said, when Black gets to doing good again, he'll be screwing up. You never said that. You just said, come to the barn, get on some horses, and we'll find some winners for you. And the multitude of injuries, you never said, Black broke some bones. His heart ain't going to be in it. He's going to be scared. You never said that. You just said, come to the barn, get him some horses, and we'll find some winners. So that's more than just a friend, more than just a trainer. He was a true believer, and we believed in each other. You know, it was amazing. Some of the stories with the horses that he had. He had a horse he remembers called Fast Today that he got off of Alan Jurgens. When he got the horse off of Alan Jurgens, Alan said, just one of the fastest horses I've had. And he said, but he has a slab fracture of the knee before he ever got to the races. Well, guess what? When JJ rehabbed him and got him to the races, we won races with Fast Today. And he had a knee that you looked like you could step up on to get up on his back. How big his knee was. And JJ remembered all that stuff. He was so sharp the other day. You know, and when I came home, I was thinking, man, this guy's amazing. You know, he was upbeat talking and shooting the bull and telling stories and laughing. And, you know, I couldn't believe when, I could believe it because I knew what was going on with him. When I got the call yesterday and they said he passed peacefully with family around him, you know, Kim, his daughter, and Chris, his son. And when I was there on Thursday, I didn't get a chance to see them and haven't seen them for years because they were working and they were coming after their work. And when JJ got tired, he says, oh, I know you got to get going. You got a couple hours trip, you know. And I, you know, I gave him a hug and a kiss and a tear came to my eyes. And I said, I love you, JJ. And when I was walking out, he said, see you on the other side, brother. Just remember that. I'll see you on the other side. And I thought, you know, what a guy, like, upbeat. You would have never thought on Thursday, when I went to see him, that he wasn't going to be here till yesterday, you know, Sunday. And like I said, he passed peacefully. He was just a real friend, a big brother, a guy that I said, I love you, JJ. And his words to me, his last words were, and I'll never forget them, see you on the other side. Now, I don't know if I'm going to make the other side and being in the same place, because he was such a good-hearted guy and did so much for so many people. And he enjoyed the racing game. He loved the horses.
Yeah.
He loved being part of the winners. And I mean winners. When I saw the winner's circle pictures of horses, I even forgot their names. And he always had a big smirk on his face or a smile on his face, you know, like he really accomplished something. And he did, because he got a lot of horses over there and got a lot of pictures. We made it to the winner's circle. But you know what? It was more than just making it to the winner's circle. Our winner's circle was our relationship and our life that we spent around each other. That was a winner's circle. There's not always people that you interact with that are going to be your friends for as long as JJ was friends, more than a friend. You know, when I wrote for him, we had pictures from the 80s, you know, over 30 years I wrote for it. And how many jocks can say, oh, I wrote for this guy for 30 years. And now I look and I'm thinking last night I was thinking, man, you just joined a list of guys that I rode for. And you were all special to me. Guys like K-Mac, Donnie Reeder, Walter Reese, and now J.J. Gracie. On that list of guys that are no longer here that were believers, and I believed in them, and I truly believed in J.J. He was, like I said, more than a friend, more than a client.
Yeah.
A big brother. I love you, JJ, if you're listening.
Well,
I love you.
And we, you know, Tony, you got to mention, and you mentioned Reliable Jeff, which was his biggest earner. And, of course, he's one of those trainers in Equibase where the numbers are incomplete. They don't,
yeah.
You know, they only go back to 76. But he was a good horseman, and he could pick out a horse, he could patch a horse up, and you know, a certain type that, you know, right, that could make a horse, you know, bring back, as he would say, you know, that they would have a flashback. He could get a horse to remember, you know, remember what it was.
And you know what, you're right on, like that. He, you know, and he had horses that had, you know, a limited amount of races left down. But, you know, I never had a horse of his pull up or break down with me.
There you go.
You know,
there you go.
We had,
what a compliment.
And I can't say that for everybody.
What
that
a compliment.
I wrote for.
Yep.
And he's saying to me, if there was a horse that, you know, he didn't lead him over there if they were questionable, but he always left me as the last word. And he says, you don't like the way he's warming up? Just scratch him. I never scratched a horse of his. I didn't have to, because he let him over there, and they were in good order. So it was amazing, all the horses I rode for him. And like you say, 600-700 winners, and never scratched a horse. Didn't have to. You know, he wouldn't lead him over there if he thought there was some question about them not being able to make it around there. You know, that's an unusual when a person gets that caliber of horses. A lot of the horses he got, they were second-handed, you know?
Sure.
They were horses that had seen their better days. But like you said, they got a flashback to the success, to their successful years, because he got them over there feeling good. He got them over there happy, and he got them over there to the extent of being as fit as they had to be to compete well. He was a great guy to ride for, but even a greater guy to say, I could call a friend, a big brother. That's what he was greater at, being my big brother.
Well, and Tony, you know, in terms of being a media, you know, media personality, he did the television show, the Let's Go Racing show in Philadelphia, which has been, you know, a long term. You know, he had kind of a rough, when I say rough exterior, I mean, he didn't have the kind of necessarily, you know, a a polished delivery, but he was absolutely, he was frank about everything. And he was never afraid to express, I won't say an unpopular opinion, but just any, you know, any opinion, kind of a tell it like it is approach, and would just shrug if people didn't want to hear, you know, some of the realities of the game. He couldn't, you know, he couldn't be bothered that they didn't want to hear it. It's just what the facts were about, you know, certain elements. And frankly, I've tried to present that, learned that from him, because I've tried to do that myself.
Yeah, reality and authenticity. That was two words that come to mind when I think of his portrayal of horse racing. You know, the reality of it's a highly stressful athletic event. It's also at times a very costly and expensive sport to be involved in. And he put the reality and the authenticity of the sport out there and did it in a way where, you know, he wasn't sugarcoating and whitewashing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He put it out there real. And if you didn't, I guess maybe his philosophy was, if you can't take what I'm saying, then change the channel. You know? Because he put it out there like it is. And he loved the sport. And
yep.
He loved the horses,
yep.
You know.
Yep.
We thought about Reliable Jeff. You brought him up. You know, Reliable Jeff, he wound up getting Reliable Jeff. And in Pennsylvania, he was picked as Horse of the Year. The same year, he was the Horse of the Year in New Jersey. And I think, how many horses? And he was a Jersey bred. And, you know, Jersey breds at times have been stated as not the most prestigious breed in horse racing. You know, everybody
sure.
can talk to Florida. They're the prestigious breeds. But he was a Jersey bred of the year and Pennsylvania Horse of the Year. And I thought, man, that's pretty... pretty big accomplishment, you know, and it was just so enjoyable to be there on Thursday, last Thursday, and reminisce about these horses. Like I said, he had pictures, and I said, man, I forgot the name of that horse. Oh, I forgot that horse. And J.J., Yvonne's Delight, you didn't forget her name, did you? She used to turn over in the gate like it was clockwork. I said, she never flipped on me, J.J. And he says, that's why we got along. He says, and that's why we got along with Reliable Jeff. You knew he was a hardhead and going to do things his way. And so were you, Black. And he says, so was I. But we didn't interfere with Reliable Jeff's thinking. He was a hard head. He was going to do it his way, and you didn't interfere with it. That's why we got along. All of us had our own way of thinking. And I says, yeah, you're right, JJ. You know, we had a lot of fun. We enjoyed a lot of wins. We even reminisced about a party he had on his farm. And then he said, how about the party you had on your farm? And I'm thinking, yeah, it was some real fun times. You know, and he says, and then he said to me, he says, yeah, you brought that horse out, that two-year-old that you raised. You didn't put a saddle on his back, and you had a bridle in his mouth and said, give me a leg up, JJ. And he said, and he had quite a few beers of courage. I told you, put him back in the stall. I ain't giving you a leg up. And you put him back in the stall. You listen to me one more time. I says, man, JJ, I even forgot about that one. But we had some fun and memories, that unbelievable amount of memories. And he surely will be missed. Hard time coming to the reality that he's gone. But I am so glad that Sam called me on
yeah.
Tuesday
yeah.
so I could get out there Thursday. And I won't forget all the time I spent with him that couple hours.
Well, and another round of a you know, sympathies, and Sam, Anita St. Clair, Sam, who was so protective. If you whenever you'd see them together, I mean, she looked at him. I mean, just with stars in her eyes. I mean, she adored him and was so protective.
And a credit to her. I mean, she made sure she brought him home.
Yeah.
To have his last days at a place that he wanted to be. He didn't want to pass in a hospital. He had his last days with Sam and family in his home, in his favorite easy chair.
I love that.
He lay back in the chair, and he says, "Black, do something useful. Put this, cover my feet." JJ, you're giving me orders. He says, "Well, I never gave you orders when you rode my horses." He says, "Because I figured." And he says, "Like they say, good riders don't need orders, and bad riders can't follow them."
That's right.
"So I never gave you orders." I says, "Well, what'd you consider me as? Good or bad?" He says, "You figure it out. You rode enough winners for me. You figure it out, Black."
Well, and the other part is that he leaves as he would say about his daughter Kim, who herself has already piled up 600 wins. She wins a lot, and as JJ would say, she's by a trainer, out of a trainer, and
we talked about her. He says, "You know something about that girl? She ain't afraid to run them and jam them down somebody's throat." I said, "Well, I wonder where she got that idea from, JJ." I mean, he says, "Yeah." He says, "She runs them sometimes, of course, where they belong, and sometimes takes the edge." I said, "Oh, I can't believe she takes the edge." I said, "I can't believe she probably only witnessed you doing it a few hundred times. I couldn't believe that she would do it any other way." And so he was real proud of his kids, Kim and Chris. I mean, just so proud of him.
Well, thinking of him too, of course, and the grandchildren, and one more time, as before we go, Tony, I thought of that opportunity when we were going to stop at Delaware on the way back from that trip from Colonial and everything we did, the Haskell Colonial Chincoteague trip. And I thought, you know what, we could stop at Delaware, and maybe I can get Joe to come on with, and get you to come down. And I am so glad that we did that. I would have, as badly as I feel with this news, I'd feel a lot worse not having had some kind of a coda to have him on, have him back on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. It was such a good experience. I'm glad we did it. And, at the races, and now JJ's in the beyond. So at the races and JJ in the beyond. And I love you, JJ. And can you hear him say, "See you on the other side, Black"? said that from the beyond. I heard him.
Well, and for those, the beyond reference, as I mentioned at the start of the show, when I broke this, this sad news, the show was originally called At the Races and Beyond. The beyond being, just sort of the other topics that would percolate, and they still do. That's really still the core essence of the show, and it'll always have Joe Gracie's thumbprint on it because. A lot went into it, and the fact that it's continued this long is a tribute to him and Sam and John Parada. So, Tony, I thank you for this. Hammer joined us for a couple of minutes before he flew to Kentucky, and we have to pay proper tribute because the show doesn't exist without J.J. Gracie.
Well, and thank you for loving me at this time, Steve. And I'm so proud of the existence of this show and the history of this show. And keep up the good work, because I'm so proud of what you do for racing. Thank you again, Steve. And love you, brother.
Love you, too. And Tony Black, everybody. Let's... let's get to Steve Anderson and kind of lift the mood and talk about the racing, because between the Starlet and the two quarter horse affairs, Los Al was the place to be. Fun afternoon Saturday at Los Al, and an exciting Starlet, not necessarily a fast Starlet. these fillies, I don't know what it's going to take, but the fillies continue to be well behind the boys. 77 buyer for Faiza, and there was plenty of hubbub too with the Starlet, and I saw people write headlines. I saw a headline somewhere. Faiza survives the inquiry. Faiza didn't have anything to do with the inquiry. She was fine. Steve Anderson is going to join us. And Steve, good morning.
Well, good morning. Hope you're staying dry at Santa Anita this morning on a wet wind on a wet Monday in Southern Cal.
I think the rain seems to be over.
No, sorry. I hate to interrupt you like that.
No.
Give it 20 minutes.
Oh, no.
It's coming across the L.A. Basin. And there's one more big blast just coming on shore right now.
Oh, boy.
And if when you live on the coast, you notice these things. I'm so sorry.
And here I was. I'm dry enough. You know where I am, of course.
Yes.
And you know what I'll do? I'll pull one of the pictures of you talking to me here from a couple of years ago instead. So
really?
we'll pretend that it's a beautiful morning.
But you know, the second half of the morning will be pretty. But we let us get past dawn and a few more minutes, and then the rain will blow through. But I tell you what, it's going to be nice to look up in the afternoon and see some snow on top of those mountains above Santa Anita, because I'm sure there's just a little bit of a dusting. It's really cool for the season and for this region, and it's a much appreciated snowstorm. And if anybody who randomly happens to be flying from L.A. to Vegas or back and forth today, please look out your window, because it's going to be gorgeous.
I love it. Well, Hammer just took off. And we should mention, I haven't said anything, but no training on the main track this morning. The expectation tomorrow. The expectation that we'll get regular work resuming tomorrow, but there are horses utilizing the training track.
Yeah, yesterday it was closed too because it was wet as well. So that's standard for Santa Anita's procedures in the last few years, taking a very more precautious basis when winter like this arrives. There hasn't been that many days of it because of drought conditions, but in the last few weeks there has been a bit more of a wet cycle. So it'll be interesting to see if that affects racing and training when the meeting begins, just in 2 short weeks from today, actually.
Well, exactly. It's one of the reasons we're going to be on vacation from the 26th. That, you know, we always take Christmas to New Year's off, so we'll be able to preview opening day, one of the great dates anywhere in the game, and of course the Malibu, the centerpiece, and we'll start to look ahead and see how that field. You never know what three-year-old from what part of the country shows up. But in the meantime, Steve, ahead of that, let's look at this weekend, and it was all Los Al all the time between the thoroughbreds in the afternoon, and then in the evenings, the champion of champions Saturday night, and then last night at 3-5, the top 2-year-old in the Futurity. Pretty nice weekend, all in all.
It was a fascinating weekend for both thoroughbreds and quarter horses, like you say, a day and night. What was really reassuring was to see how many people came out on Saturday evening to watch what was probably certainly was the best champion of champions run in the last 40 years, and probably the best horse race ever run there. And the race lived up to expectation with the win by Impressum in time that was the fastest 440 in 12 years, 21.08 seconds, and a length of a quarter win over Danger, the 2021 quarter horse world champion. So Impressum, on the strength of that race, as well as two comprehensive wins in older horse races at Los Al back in July and August, is probably going to be the horse of the year. There's been a lot of parity among the 2 and 3-year-old divisions in quarter horse racing this year, but Impressum, when it counted the most on Saturday night, ran one of the finest races of his career. He's got 7 stakes wins in the last since April of 2021. The Remington Park Oklahoma Bred Derby, the Ruidoso and Rainbow Derbies, the Texas Classic Derby, and he was champion 3-year-old last year, and then this year, the Vessels Maturity, Go Man Go, and of course the Champion of Champions, which at $750,000 is the richest race for older horses in quarter horse racing. So a very comprehensive performance from him from the start to finish, and high hopes that he can have a campaign probably geared towards the second half of 2023, and probably very similar to what he did this year during those time periods. So a really optimistic that 5 year, that soon to be 5 year old gelding can have a big season next year too.
This is a homebred, Jeff Jones and Steve Holt from Oklahoma, and Heath Taylor trains. What's amazing to me when you look at his record, when you see quarter horses, Steve, from what I know, and you've talked about this, when you see quarter horses winning at this level by 1 3/4, 2.5 lengths, that's like winning by 8 in a thoroughbred race.
Yeah, it is really an open length situation in thoroughbreds where they're geared down, you know, in the last 16th of a mile. Well, that can't happen in quarters because of the style of the sport. But nonetheless, yes, it is remarkable to see that much separation between between Impressive and Danger, and then a very good horse at Apolitical Pence, who won the preceding two runnings of the Champion Champions, farther back in third, beating 2 lengths. And probably the most exciting prospect in the field, other than Impressive, is Bomb Cyclone, the 3-year-old, who finished 4th as the 2-1 favorite, beating 2.25 lengths after a slow start. He easily could grow up into a challenger to Impressive in 2023. Interestingly enough, last night, Chris O'Dell, who trains Bomb Cyclone, won the Los Alamitos 2 million fraternity with his 2-year-old full brother, Cyber Attack. And in the winner's circle, reflecting on Bomb Cyclone's loss, O'Dell said, you know, that's like a college kid playing against the pros, the 3-year-old quarter horses versus the older. And there's high hopes that Bomb Cyclone can be a very good 4-year-old against those tough horses in 2023. He'll probably race in Ruidoso in the summertime.
Impress him over Danger and Apolitical Pence, who actually beat Impress him in the last, and ends the season pretty nice. 4 wins, as you laid out, at the top level. And that cleared us from Saturday night late. And then before we talk about the Starlet and the Soviet problem, let's talk about last night, the $1.8 million futurity and 3-5 winner.
Whatever breed you follow or whatever aspect of racing you enjoy the most, it's rare to see full brothers win the same race consecutive years, even if it's a minor race at a state bred stakes or something. But to do so in the biggest futurity of the year in California and the second richest futurity in the nation is even more remarkable. Cyber Attack was a $400,000 yearling purchase last year. And Bomb Cyclone was an expensive yearling purchase in his yearling year as well. So to see it happen twice, like that, is really remarkable. And now we've seen this kind of come up, Cyber Attack come up through as the fastest qualifier to this race from the November 20 trials. And earlier this year, he was second in the Ruidoso, in the Rainbow Fraternity of Ruidoso, but he grabbed a quarter severely to the point where there was some concern about whether he'd be able to race again this year. So badly did he do so. And Chris O'Dell last night said that it was several weeks before he had that horse, his foot, through the work of some veterinarians and other and farriers and experts at Ruidoso to get that race, that foot back in business. And so they couldn't run in the All-American fraternity. So they waited for the Los Alamitos fall races. Well, he was beaten the nose in the Golden State Million fraternity in late October by Party, a very good horse called Party Politics, came back, as I mentioned, and set the fastest qualifying time for this 2-man fraternity. And then last night, very impressive, broke sharply towards the outside a little bit, moved over just a little bit towards the middle of the track when he was clear, and finished very well to beat 2 horses trained by Heath Taylor, who have had brilliant seasons. He's judge and jury, finished 3rd last night. All he's done this year is win the All-American. But he was 3rd best last night to Cyber Attack and his stablemate Jericho, who was also a very good 2-year-old at Ruidoso this summer. He won a trial for the All-American, but was just a little slow, Remember, they only take 5 horses out of 15 races per day. So you can imagine the odds are against you, even when the overnight comes out. You really have to be almost perfect to qualify for the All-American. And Jericho, if I remember correctly, had the 6th fastest time on his day. So he very nearly got an All-American berth. In fact, he was qualified for a $200,000 consolation on Labor Day, but they held him out of that race in anticipation of running him this fall. And they were rewarded by a good second last night when he finished really well. And to go by, he's judge and jury in the last few strides to finish second, although never threatening cyber attack. So, again, we look at what we saw this weekend, but we also look at it in the context of what's coming up next year. And it looks to me like those three horses will be easy to follow and fun to see what they can do, particularly in the Rainbow Derby rather in July, and then building towards the All-American Derby at Rio Doso that on Labor Day weekend, and 11 months from now the Los Alamitos Super Derby, which is the second richest derby in the nation. Maybe it's third, but it's very high on the list depending on the prize money levels with jackpot racing, you know, in 11 months time. So those three guys are going to go into the winter time as three of the top 2-year-olds to follow in the sport.
Cyber Attack, Rosenthal Ranch, and Calbred, my favorite cartel. And who's the 2-year-old champ?
Oh boy, I wish you hadn't asked that. I think that it is probably going to be a very split vote. Then I think that the body of work by He's Judge and Jury will carry him quite a ways. Winning the All-American is like almost like winning the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. It's not quite that high, but it's almost double points, so to speak, when you take into context, you know, discussions such as this, you know, because that's the fraternity that is the Kentucky Derby style race, you know, the Dreamboat race, the one you always strive to achieve. And while there are loads of other good fraternities, the Texas Classic fraternity and the other races of Rio Doso, as well as the Los Alamitos 3 7-figure races ending with the $2 million, they're not the All-American. And for Heath Judge and Jury to qualify to the finals of the Rio Doso fraternity, Rainbow fraternity, All-American fraternity, and then hit the board in the Los Al $2 million is a tremendous body of work for a whole 2-year-old season. In that regard, I think that the panel that does this is not done in a style that is as democratic as the Thoroughbred method or the Harness method, where there's a panel of, you know, a large number of voters that submit ballots. This is done by a committee, so it's a little different, and sometimes I don't feel like it's as fair as it is in Thoroughbred racing. But nonetheless, a big season by He's Judge and Jury that's going to be easy for those people to honor.
Well, I've had this discussion with Jay Pribman, who feels there's a lot of merit to that, you know, to that concept, and that there's some categories, frankly, on the Eclipse front that might benefit from having a panel make the decisions.
And I understand and support his point of view and circumstances. And this time, I think they get it right by and large, because I do look at this critically about this time of year, and we'll know the awards. I think it's third Wednesday of January, in conjunction with the Heritage Place sales in Oklahoma City, since there's a big gathering of folks in the sport at that event. That's the time when the awards are announced. So it's rather early in the year compared to some other awards.
Well, over $2.5 million in prize money Saturday and Sunday night for the quarters at Los Al, and turn to the Thoroughbred side of things, and that was an exciting starlet. It wasn't a fast starlet, and Steve, these 2-year-old fillies, I God bless them, but not just these starlet fillies, but the fillies collectively just are well behind the boys this year, and we had some bumping and grinding that went on. Didn't really. The winner wasn't involved, but Faiza, the Girvan filly, follows up her maiden win with a starlet.
And it's interesting that Baffert now has won the race 6 consecutive years, and any domination like that is fascinating to see that much consistency. The race often suffers from a small field, and on Saturday it had five, and he had two of them. And Phaser was favored, and off of a very attractive maiden race win on November 12th at Del Mar, going 7/8, when she disputed the pace. But in this race, she did not. She was a patient filly under Flavian Pratt, and came up on the three wide on the outside, and had to fight off a very promising filly called Pride of the Nile, trained by Doug O'Neill and Leandro Moro, the team of those people, who had some experience in one-mile races already, whereas Phaser was trying a two-turn race for the first time, and she got the job done. Question now becomes, what can she do in the early year? The most recent five winners that Baffert has had in the Starlet have not gone on to do well in recent years. We've seen some horses win stakes. Dream Tree came back to win, and the others have hit the board in Santa Anita Oaks or other things. But what we haven't seen is a filly from Baffert's list of winners in the Starlet go on to, like, take, for example, a Fantasy, a Kentucky Oaks, a Santa Anita Oaks, or an Ashland. You know, they're not at the four of the three-year-old filly division when the winter turns into the spring. So can this one break that trend? And there certainly is every reason to think that she's got the ability to go forward in that regard, having won her first two starts in diverse styles, you know, on the front and quietly and off the pace a little bit. $725,000 yearling back in May. I'm sorry, two-year-old in training back in May at Maryland at the Facing Tipton sale. You know, two for two, you can't knock that. Knowing Baffert, he probably won't run her again until the last of February, first of March. I would imagine races at Oakland Park and Santa Anita are going to be at the four of his ideas, which is typical of what he typically does with his leading three-year-old fillies.
This is a Gerben out of a Smart Strike mare, Barrary Jones, and 77 buyer, a slight improvement off the debut of a 74. The disappointment here, it's interesting. Uncontrollable ended up going off at 4-1 as the second choice. Blessed Touch, and of course we'll talk in a second about Tim Yakteen winning yesterday, but the Yakteen filly really just sort of went around.
Yes.
There was also, you know, there was real potential for Pride of the Nile to come down after that, and really did interfere, it seemed, with Baffert's other horse, doing it the hard way.
Yes, and I spoke to Juan Hernandez, the jockey of Pride of the Nile, after the race, and he argued that he kept his lane, which is what he was supposed to say. But that was an interesting circumstance, and I looked at it critically because I thought for a moment, instantly after the race, I thought, wait a minute, did Faiza come to the inside and affect those other two? And, well, that wasn't the case. So, I thought that was probably a non-call, but it was getting into the gray area of, did it affect those three with Pride of the Nile on the inside, doing it the hard way in the middle, and Faiza on the outside of three with, you know, again, Losel's got that crazy long stretch, unlike anything else in the United States. They turn for home, jump five strides, then they hit the quarter pole. Think of all the tracks that we watch when they're on the turn when they hit the quarter pole. So it's a different kind of sport there sometimes, and you see that those horses kind of go, wait a minute, aren't I supposed to be farther into the race than I am now?
Yeah, exactly.
330 yards to run? Yes, you do. So it's a little different stretch run at that track than others, and it sometimes I think, especially with these young, inexperienced two-year-old fillies, relatively, you know, they're not quite prepared for that as much as a veteran horse might be.
Well, in addition to winning the Starlet a couple races earlier, Baffert sent out the Twirling Candy Colt for the SF group with Starlight and Matticat, etc., Bob Masterson and even Stone Street involved. And Twirling Candy Gilmore, a romping winner, 81 buyer in the second start, and so this is stretching out to a mile, and so and Baffert likes this horse. I asked him. I said, "What do you think?" He said, "He's okay." He said, "This is going to be all right." This was just a $250,000 purchase at Keeneland September as a yearling, and might be okay. Nice gray horse.
Just a $250,000 purchase.
Exactly.
Baffert's, you know, like similar to Chad Brown or Aidan O'Brien or many other of the world's leading trainers, are blessed with the a list of clients that allow them to basically go to these sales and by 15 first-round draft choices.
Yeah.
I've said this before. I might have even told you that. But I've said it before to friends. And I go, you know, it must be wonderful. And seriously, it must be absolutely fantastic to know that you can go in there with a multi-million dollar, 10-figure, or sorry, 8-figure bankroll and look at these prospects up and down these sales and go, yeah, let's buy them. And 15 months later, you're at LoSal with Gilmore, you know, with a very nice result, thinking, well, now we have to kind of look towards 2023 with high goals. And he'd been third at Del Mar last month in a 6 furlongs race, closing with interest. And then now in this mile race, did what he was supposed to do. Like you said, an 81 buyer, and he'll need to keep rising in that category to be a factor in the March and April conversations. But why not? You know, there's just many of them now that are just kind of waking up in their lives and in their careers that we'll be talking about at that time period next year.
Juan Hernandez aboard Gilmore, Flavian Pratt aboard Faiza, and, of course, Michael Lund Peterson, who seems to have very steady. He's had a good horse or two every year since his involvement in racing began. Speaking of success in racing, George Krikorian with the Calbred Homebred cast member, Ramon Vasquez, who really, I tell you, really is a nice fit out here, it seems, Steve.
Yeah, his agent, Bill Castle, fights for him. And they've carved out a niche. They've won a few training riding titles at some of the lesser meets, and he was very good at the fall meet at Santa Anita in October too, and he's worked himself into many of these leading stables, and I think he'll be able to maintain a position in those barns at the Santa Anita meet when you see, you know, more riders coming in, Kilmora from the leading rider from Woodbine, Frankie Dettori's on his way. You know, we're going to see a lot more Contreras is coming down from Canada as well. So it's going to be fun to watch who winds up at the top of the train at the jockey standings after the first 3 weeks, 6 weeks and on. You know, they all can't ride for Baffert and Phil Tabano. Let's be clear. I mean, those guys are going to be in those barns, but it's going to be interesting to watch how these jockey rankings come through at Santa Anita, because I think it's going to be very competitive. I'm not going to dare compare it to some of the bygone years when it was, you know, a Hall of Fame, you know, collective in the jockey's room. But nonetheless, it should be very competitive. And I think the sport will benefit for it, because these guys are going to be riding, you know, very tactical races, and they're going to be very competitive. And they already are competitive, but they wouldn't be here to begin with. But nonetheless, I think it's going to be a very entertaining first 60 days of the meet to see how it shakes out and who can stake a claim to challenge a Flavian Pratt or Juan Hernandez for the top of the table.
It's going to be interesting to see, you know, see the fresh faces. You mentioned Kaz Kimura, and I saw him tweet that I guess he drove from Toronto, and he said he arrived in California safe, and you can tell he's excited. And there's going to be people, you know, people that don't watch Woodbine. I was late getting hip to how good he is, and Kimura's going to open some eyes because he's adept. So,
well, in that case, then you're going to be the beneficiary, because there's going to probably be some 6 to 8 to 1 chances when he is ignored here in you know, 2 weeks' time.
Good.
Some sleepy little race, and all of a sudden you're going to think, wow, that was a good result.
There
so,
you go.
So, you know, his backers may have to be patient, but they may find a day when they go, geez, he fits, you know, and he'll be tested, and he knows it, and you know, it'll be fun to watch how he progresses as well.
Well, we will certainly look ahead, take the opportunity with Steve Anderson to also look ahead to next week, the second week of the LoSal season, and Baffert seems to have a pat hand, you know, heading toward the Futurity next week, and then 2 weeks from today, they'll open the gates here and Boxing Day at the Great Race Place.
It's going to be a fun day to watch, because it looks like there'll be some pretty good sized fields for the Mathis Mile and the American Oaks, the two turf races for 3-year-olds. Those races should get really nice sized fields. Whether or not the races such as the Grade One sprints for 3-year-olds, the La Brea for fillies, or the Malibu get large fields, you know, kind of remains to be seen. Sometimes those fields fluctuate year to year. The neat thing about the Malibu is it has some ramifications for the three-year-old male championships. For example, if Tava, who hit the board in the Breeders' Cup Classic, if he were to win the Malibu, that would be his third grade one of the year.
Right.
In a season, he didn't see a dominant three-year-old necessarily. So his backers will be able to argue that, well, heck, what he wants to do when Flight Line's hogging all the important races, other than win three G1s. So we'll see how he turns out. And there'll be others in the field, too. So it'll be fun to watch. Mandela's got Forbidden Kingdom, the beaten favorite in the Santa Anita Derby, who was beaten in the ancient title, the Santa Anita Sprint Championship in October, came back to hit the board in an allowance race at Del Mar back in November. And he's building towards a race in the 7-furlong Malibu. Juan Hernandez is going to ride him. Juan worked him last week and said in conversation last a few days ago that he was very impressed with the way the horse raced. So maybe third start after a six-month layoff will be Forbidden Kingdom's day in the Malibu. Huh. We'll have to wait and see. So those are just four of the races that are going to be run that day. Country Grammar, all he's done this year is win the Dubai World Cup. He's running in the San Antonio Stakes that day, and that's a 1/16 race for older horses that leads into, the series at Santa Anita, but also could lead to the Pegasus World Cup down at Gulfstream. So that's a fascinating race. And then there's also the San Gabriel Stakes at 1 length, so on the turf. So not bad, 6 stakes.
Steve Anderson, Golden Gate wrapped up as well, and you track up north, and so hiatus not for that long.
Just taking a week off, so they'll come back on December 26th as well, and they finished with a strong weekend. Very, very good racing there on Saturday and Sunday. Very complex, big fields, tough. If you put a few winners together, well done to you, because that was tricky. A lot of 8-to-1 and 10-to-1 winners. And a few others that were longer prices as well. And a good win by Chancery Way in the Bear Fan Stakes for State Bred Sprinters on Saturday, although she benefited from the late scratch of another speed runner. But the really interesting horse is Tizit Adventure, who won the Miss America Stakes for Fillies and Mares at 1/16 yesterday with a 3-wide move in the stretch. She was claimed for $25,000 by Jack Steiner back in April, and has won 6 of 7 starts since then. And she was a very good filly in that race at 1/16 yesterday on their synthetic track. And Steiner has been kind of the MVP of the Northern California Trainers Group this year. He's had a career best season and has had his stable grow in size. And with the looming departure, or at least the de-emphasis of California racing by Jonathan Wong, who is the leading trainer up there, Steiner has a chance to even take a greater role in 2023 on that circuit, because there will be a little bit of a reorganization of the trainer standings there if Wong continues with the plan that he discussed last weekend.
Right.
Of going more into the Kentucky racing. And I know he wants to stay with a stable in Southern California, but I don't know that he'll have the same presence in Northern Cal that he's had for the last several years.
Steve Anderson, outstanding. I appreciate this chance to our big quarter horse weekend. When we come to,
yep.
we had things pulling us in another direction, so I couldn't get to either event. But at a party Saturday night, and then Sunday I went to the game last night. Courtesy of Gary Barber, invited me to join him.
Really?
And, oh, it was so much fun! That is some. I finally got to Hollywood Park. It's not how I wanted.
There are a group of us, and I'm included, who have yet to set foot in SoFi Stadium because of the piece of earth on which it resides.
Yeah, yeah, I can
and
see
I'm
it.
I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. And there's, I just as soon think of a Zenyatta than think of the Los Angeles Rams. Mm. So we'll see. Over time, I'm sure that that difficulty will and that pain will kind of subside. But hey, man, that's where the races were held. And then it's a missed race course, as there are in all sorts of parts of the country, too, and for people who carry that sort of pride. So, anyway, we'll have to look forward to December 26th and look forward to visiting with you as well in the new year and get caught up on the racing that we enjoy.
Steve, can't thank you enough. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, happy, healthy New Year. Steve
thank
Anderson,
you.
Everybody. DRF Anderson, you spell it with an E. and does just an unbelievable job. And even covers things that I don't even think they pay him for some of the things he covers. That's how much Steve Anderson loves the race game, and does such a fabulous job. We're going to start to turn toward the top of the hour break, and actually, I guess we have to because we're 10 minutes in. So let's get some music on the way out, Case, and I'll set up hours 2 and 3, such as we've got. Graham Motion is going to join us. Haven't had a chance last week, got away from us, but we will slip in one more Del Mar recap, which is the grade one, the Hollywood Derby win. Want to talk to Graham. He's actually had some other nice winners as well. So catch up with Graham. There it is. Speaking scout from closing weekend at Del Mar. And Carl Broberg. You're going to get a dose of Broberg. I couldn't resist. Haven't talked yet about Oaklawn opening weekend, so we got that to dive into. Weather was, you want to talk about wet weather? Holy cow, that was tough. By the way, because I know he's listening, because he listens every morning. Ron Moquette. Leave it to Moquette to spring the upset. And I guarantee, you know, I saw Spurrier in those PPs on Saturday. First-time starter. By Tun Wu. Yeah. And, I mean, let's be honest. No, nobody actually liked Steve Spurrier, right? The old ball coach. Boy, anyway, so I think that inhibited, unbelievable. Not only did he win, he won romping at 23-1, 48-20, 20-40 and $11, Spurrier Saturday. But anyway, good opening weekend. We'll go through the stakes results, a little bit of everything, actually. And, you know, it was interesting, even with that wet track, and I was worried because I handicapped the six races, and I knew it was going to be wet, and I tried to anticipate, but I watched some of the Friday racing opening day, and it didn't seem like the track was just, you know, giving it up to nothing but speed. So I sort of handicapped, like, you know, the track was going to be fair, and it pretty much was. Flash of Mischief is who we're going to talk about with Broberg, the Jerry Nanny homebred. And this is, we, you know, mentioned this horse ended up going off at 3-2. But, you know, going back to the David Vance, now has compiled two triple-digit buyers in his last three races. I mean, the Breeders' Cup Sprint, I don't blame him for trying. 20-1, got beat 7 lengths. But this is a nice horse. 4-year-old colt, an Into Mischief for Namy. And we'll catch up with Broberg. We're going to talk about the contest play, too, with him. So Broberg's next. And I still got to talk about the football game. We had so much fun. I don't have a necessarily rooting interest, but I certainly rooted for the Chargers. Miami was, they were out of sync the whole night. Christmas music, ATR Christmas music, when we come back. We're live at Santa Anita.